Hey, 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 bro nerds, Iggy here, bringing you episode 185 of the Nerdcast. We have plenty of excitement for you this week's episode. Oscar recaps, Umbrella Academy, Wandering Earth, Anthem, Marvel Phase 4, and a bunch of other things intertwined in there. Before we get going, big favor. If you don't already subscribe, do us a favor, check out that subscribe button. Not only will you get episodes like this of the Nerdcast, you get access to Meeple Skills, I'm Not Famous interview series, now streaming, diving deep, plenty of awesome content across this feed. And of course, if you do subscribe, you like what we're doing, tell your friends, help get the word out there. We want people to hear what's going on, so that way we can continue to grow what we're doing. All right, nerds, let's get you into this week's episode of the Nerdcast. Adam, Bob, Tyler, and Iggy coming at you.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
I knew it. I knew you were bluffing. I knew he was bluffing.
You're listening to the Nerdcast.
We're just like Kevin Bacon.
With Adam, Bob, Iggy, and Tyler.
You just mind your P's and Q's, Buster, and remember who you're dealing with.
Only on Project Nerd.
99999!
Anyway, that's what my new thing is. And apparently there's 6 seasons of it on Hulu, so I'm gonna...
6 seasons of Letterkenny, so... For those of you just joining us, which is everybody, we're recording here. It's the Nerdcast, and we're here for episode 185, and Tyler is plugging Letterkenny to us, which, again, I said Matt over at O-Comic-Con has been pushing it heavily, too, so I guess I need to check it out.
It made big place in Ontario, but there are a lot of parallels to rural resting Kansas where I grew up. So
there you go. Awesome. Well, outside of Letterkenny, we have plenty of other things to talk about, including our Oscar picks recap, the Oscar recaps in general, with that Chadwick Boseman look after Green Book gets announced as the best picture winner, or Spike Lee just turning his back to the stage, whichever you prefer. Hollywood was not pleased with Hollywood picking Green Book as the best picture winner. So there's that. Of course, plenty of other things too. Something that I was excited about is The Wandering Earth, 19 days to reach $600 million at the box office in one country. That's stupid. Stupid. All right. So what's going on, guys?
Not much, buddy. Just hanging out. Another good week. And I felt really glad that you guys did really bad on the Oscars, because then I didn't look like I did so bad. So I want to thank you guys for that.
Your numbers were a little closer to ours.
Yeah, it was, you know, I wasn't 50% lower than anybody.
When did you get your first win? How far into the show?
I don't know. I didn't watch the Oscars, Bob.
But didn't they give out like a supporting actress or actress, supporting actress real early? Didn't he?
I did not win that one, no.
Supporting actor was first award.
No, they opened with supporting actress.
Was it actress?
Yes, because actress,
yeah, King won.
I bit the dust immediately because I even said Regina King's going
to win. You're right.
But I'm picking at the favorite, and Adam went with the other favorite actress. He went Emma Stone. I went Rachel Weisz. Yeah, so no, he didn't get a point right out the gate. Neither did I, though, so I can't say much there. But yeah, I think that was our lowest score ever. 14 points for Bob, 13 for Tyler, 12 for Iggy, and 8. Yeah, not that far behind for Adam, because yeah, it was the lowest score in what so many categories seemed like a lock. And what frustrates me, I'm happy I finished right there within 2 points of Bob, 1 point of Tyler. Would have tied Tyler if I wouldn't have taken that gamble on, you know, Rachel Weisz. Even called it when I picked it. But what frustrates me is I did so much research this year to make sure I was gonna, because I wanted to win. But I got the lowest score I've probably gotten in the years that I came in third other times.
I mean, this is easily the lowest score I've ever gotten. I do think Bob and I do each also get an award for. He had one that he got right that no one else guessed correctly, and I got 2 that I got right that no one else guessed correctly. So
there were just too many upsets this year. It was just a weird award show.
Well, the craziest thing is Black Panther just started stealing those technical awards, because we, you know, Avengers was going to take special effects, so they were going to award First Man with the sound because people were praising that and they were winning elsewhere with that, and Black Panther just comes in and starts knocking them in Bohemian Rhapsody. And as we were chatting in our group, the way those two movies were winning early awards, it was like, uh-oh, maybe we will have an upset at Best Picture. Maybe it won't be Roma, but we were thinking maybe Black Panther, maybe Bohemian Rhapsody. And then they called Green Book, and I felt we knew something was coming, and Green Book, we even talked about it. That was the most likely to be the one that upset it.
Right.
But it still felt like such a shock.
Yeah, it was just strange, you know. We were, like I said, we were expecting, you know, because how everything was playing out, we were expecting all the Black Panther was won, editing, production, and score, which to me was a big shock. And then Bohemian Rhapsody won both the sounds. But of course, then we all knew Rami Malek would get Best Actor. And I just figured that at that point, yeah, something was going to happen. I said, I'm expecting a huge upset somewhere in the top six. Little did I know there were going to be multiple. Two upsets in the top six.
So guys, of the 24 categories, 8, 1/3, we were shut out on. None of us picked 8 of those wins correctly. Yeah. None of us got 1/3 of the categories, including some major ones like original screenplay with the Green Book shock, or Best Picture with the Green Book shock. And then, of course, First Man beating Avengers, Solo, and Ready Player One for special effects.
If there's one thing that Marvel, and I think somewhat fittingly, gets kind of dinged for, is their superhero movies do not have iconic scores. Black Panther is a significantly better score, or a more original score, than I think they've had in the past. Ludwig Göransson is definitely a bigger name doing the score than Black. I don't know. I was the most shocked by that win than any of the other ones.
So real quick, Adam, Bob, most shocked outside of Best Picture?
Olivia Colman. That to me was a huge shock.
I think it's actress for sure. And Colman's fantastic. She just seems... Bob called her quirky. I'm going to call her genuine. I think she's just 100%. This is who I am. I might be winning an Oscar or a BAFTA or, you know, any of these other prestigious awards, but I think, as the Brits would say, chuffed. So,
yeah. Again, the biggest shock to me was Best Picture.
I wasn't shocked by Olivia Colman. I mean, it was a shock would be too. I was surprised that it didn't go to Glenn Close, but Olivia Colman's so good. Like you said, she won a bunch of other awards, and she's so versatile. Brilliantly funny and super talented, but I don't know, the Green Book one, I'm not shocked. I mean, it was the next favorite, and there's a lot to unpack there, but how much of it is the way that you vote, they vote for Best Picture versus everything else? Because that voting system for Best Picture, for those who don't know, is weird comparatively. Yeah.
So you count up first place votes because you rank them. You don't just pick your favorite movie. You have to rank
everyone,
all nominees.
Yeah, ranks. Yep.
And then you do count up first place votes. If nobody has more than 50%, then you move to second place votes and so forth until you have.
So you don't even do that. So they take all the first place votes, add them up. If no one has more than 50%, they take whichever movie had the fewest first place votes, remove them, and then take each of those ballots, take whoever they voted for second place and turn them into first place votes. Then total again, if it's still not 50, take the second least voted for first place movie, turn those into first place votes for their second place movie, add them up. Like, it's not even ranked voting. It's even stranger than that. And like, there's a lot of articles out today. I mean, there's an obscene amount of articles out this week about the Green Book win and why and how and what it means. But I think they said it best. It's like, because of the way that works, where you have to, the second place votes become first place votes. If you want to win Best Picture now, you can't just make a movie that appeals to a lot of people. You have to make a movie that has super crazy broad appeal, and Green Book definitely had that comparatively.
Well, I think it's interesting because, as we said, Green Book, if it wasn't for the controversy, two controversies, and they ended up not being huge controversies, this was hands down the Best Picture winner from day one. Like, Roma didn't hit as hard as everybody was expecting it to be, and it was the fact that that controversy showed up for Green Book that kind of gave Roma what everybody thought was an open path to the win. Old white Hollywood, I guess is the best way to put it, is what put it there. And good, you talk about the many articles, a lot of comments too on, remember, Roma is Netflix, Black Panther's Disney. General Hollywood guard does not want to reward either one of those.
Yeah, I think that's 100% right. We talked a little bit about it leading in about how I didn't think anyway that the Academy would want to reward Netflix for, or want to reward a movie that was put out on Netflix for Best Picture. But the buzz around Roma and the reviews for it were just too good to ignore. I mean, it was amazingly fan reviewed, amazingly critic reviewed. And so it made sense that it would be the front runner. But yeah, I do wonder how much politics goes into it. I know a shit ton of politics goes into those decisions, but how much politically what studio puts the movie out really plays into that.
When it was said and done, the first headline I saw was Spike Lee, Kanye West's best picture speech. And then the first line of it says he didn't go on stage. And I was like, what? Just people are trying to stir up controversy. And I knew it because almost every headline you read right away. Okay, people are trying to keep controversy. I'm out. I'm off the internet. I'm not dealing with this. But later I visited again what happened. And Spike Lee essentially turned his back to the stage while Green Book did their acceptance. There's the tweet we shared earlier, which was hilarious, of the picture. The camera angle is just perfect. Caught Chadwick Boseman turning around to Michael B. Jordan with that look of like, what did it say? When you're not surprised, but you're still disappointed or something like that. I appreciate that those things did not become huge controversies afterwards because Kanye West obviously became a huge joke. I can't remember who it was. There was Faith Hill at the CMAs or the Grammys or something that one year.
Taylor Swift at the Grammys.
Yeah, when Faith Hill like...
I'm going to let you finish.
Well, that was the Kanye West one. But then there was the one where Faith Hill made the look.
The look off stage, yeah. I remember that.
Because they were nominated for best like country artist or best female artist, whatever. And I think it was Carrie Underwood that time because she was another like Taylor Swift, many consider pop. And Faith Hill, you know, the good Christian Tim McGraw wife, like for her to react, it was such a big deal. So I appreciate that there wasn't as big of a reaction here, mainly because Green Book isn't, I mean, it played it too safe with the racism. If you really wanted to reward something that was touching on a topic, there was a good amount of feedback that said, okay, here was Black Klansman that pointed it right in your face and even tied it into today, that it was based on a true event that happened back then, but it made you feel like this is what's going on today, or the big representation one with Black Panther. But yeah, Green Book. And it was funny too, because almost immediately, all the screenshots of all those old white men accepting the award for that movie on racism.
And I think the one comment is, you know, they never mentioned in the acceptance about Don Shirley.
Anytime somebody drives somebody, Spike Lee loses.
Exactly.
Right. Very much so. Spike Lee did get his first Oscar win though. And I can tell you what, win or not, Spike Lee had more fun Sunday night than anybody else at that Dolby Theater did. He was having a blast jumping into Sam Jackson's arms on his win, and man, were they cheering him. Not only him, but there's the other funny news too, in Spider-Man 1 Best Animated Film, there was one celebrity who tweeted that he kept hearing somebody chanting yes, and he turned around, it was Terry Crews, and Terry Crews retweeted the tweet chanting yes multiple times as well again. So it was good. The one thing to point out real quick, though, is they cut, especially the non quote unquote major categories, they cut their speeches at 90 seconds. They just turned the mic off.
Oh, man.
And the Spider-Man one, that was the last thing they were about to do, was give tribute to Stan Lee. And it was cut. So unfortunately,
yeah, I kept waiting for them to say something about Stan Lee. And I felt like, yeah, that was finally about to happen. And then they cut that mic. Let's be clear. Best animated feature. It's one of the biggest of the non-Big Five awards.
Yeah. Well, that's why I said quote unquote, because.
Oh, I know. I was like, let the spider guys have some time.
Yeah. There were some really bad speeches that should have been cut off right when they got to the stage. But, you know, one thing we haven't talked about yet was Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. That performance was phenomenal.
Well, I think you said tweet of the night came from somebody that said watching that made them pregnant.
Yeah.
Or it, but I think Bob, it was you and I who immediately exchanged the comments in our group chat. That was just saying what that it just,
wow, damn.
But I loved how, cause every other song for how many years has been somebody comes out, introduces it, says what it's in, they played out that they just front went from the award to just the music started, piano rolled. They walked up stage. It was just, it was perfect.
The camera placement was perfect. Like you said, it made it even more intimate because you got to see the audience in front of it, right behind them. And so it really made it feel completely different. And it just made it so much more an event, I guess, is a good way to describe it. Because
it was good, but as the unabashed, unrepentant stand for once. It was no Falling Slowly. It's a close tie, best musical performance at the Oscars between Blame, yeah. Canada, Blame Canada and Falling Slowly.
Robin Williams, Blame Canada.
Falling Slowly was real good.
So yeah. I will say one more thing on there to say, speaking of performances, I am okay with the Academy Awards opening up every year with Queen performing as opposed to having an opening dialogue. I mean, no complaints there. All right. So that was our quick Oscars recap. You can check out our last episode where we covered it from beginning to end, predicting clearly wrong quite a bit at the time who was going to win. And of course, we do have our post on Project Nerd that gives you all the winners if you did miss anything from last Sunday's night Oscars.
Hey, before you go any further, I do want to say that I do have my donuts, my Varsity donuts.
Bob get his own donuts? All right.
I had to get my own donuts.
Well, then it's taken care of. You heard it here on the Nerdcast.
Oh, no.
All right. So along the way, if you were able to see any commercial that wasn't a Walmart commercial while watching the Oscars, there was
that T-Mobile commercial.
Oh, yeah.
That was rough.
The same one over and over again. But anyways, point being, there was a little teaser for what I said was my fourth most anticipated movie of the year. And that is Scorsese's Irishman with De Niro, Pacino, Pesci, Keitel. Yeah. Anyways, it was just a little bit of dialogue with some after effects going. You didn't get anything from the scene, but it was still enough to make me say, yes, please.
Netflix has got another winner.
You needed that to say yes, please, to a Scorsese crime.
I said it was already one of my top anticipated movies of the year.
Did you need it, though, for the yes, please? Did you need it?
You know, I wanted to bring it up, Tyler. Wanted to bring it up, talk a little bit about it. The Irishman's coming out. Are you excited for The Irishman?
Yeah, but I didn't need that terrible trailer to make okay. me already be super pumped about it.
Fair.
I would almost rather no trailer than that. That was kind of like, eh.
Yeah, it was just a little taste in the dialogue. Steve Zaillian, who wrote it, the guy is amazing as a writer. So I'm just like really excited just to hear some more dialogue from that film. I don't have to see it.
I feel like they just should have flashed a black title card for 30 seconds that just had the name of every actor in the movie and Scorsese's name, and then fade to black, and then just throw The Irishman up and move on.
But that's basically it. Yeah, sure, they talked a little bit, but that was basically it.
So if you are already over the Irishman teaser, like Tyler, there was another big, big thing happening in movies this past couple weeks. Not here in Hollywood, though, over in China. And that was, well, something big did happen here with Netflix picking it up because they wanted the rest of the rights to it. But The Wandering Earth, China's own Wandering Earth, took 19 days, as I mentioned earlier, to hit $600 million in China alone. 19 days, guys. It was already not even 3 weeks to become the second highest grossing movie in China to date.
It's $31 million a day.
That's
$31 million a day for 19 days. I mean, that's how much you need. It's 31 and a half, but
that's,
I mean,
that's Bryce Harper's salary range.
God, yeah. I mean, it is wild.
It's insane. And Netflix, of course, had to swoop in and get that. Mainly, I think it's huge for Netflix because one, they don't stream in China. They're not allowed in China. Obviously, there's a lot more restrictions when it comes to streaming and internet and content and everything over there. So this helps them obviously tie a little bit closer to that country, but also reach more of an international audience outside of China. And Chinese is one of their target audiences. Chinese and Spanish has been a lot of things they've been picking up for both of those languages and countries. So interesting for sure. It is showing in select theaters. It's here at my local AMC with English subtitles. I've considered it.
Yeah, it's playing. It's definitely playing here in Kansas City, and I will definitely go see it. For in addition to like all the cinema coming out of China, there's been a big renaissance of literature, specifically sci-fi literature, coming out of China in recent years. So The Wandering Earth is based on a novella by a Chinese author, Li Xinchen. Anyway, he wrote a really, really popular sci-fi series of novels that were translated to English, won a ton of sci-fi awards, including a Hugo and a Nebula. And the novella, The Wandering Earth, that this is based on, also the Locus and the Hugo Award for Best Novella. There, I mean, in wow. I can tell you in the sci-fi literature community, like the author for whose work this is based on is super popular. So there is a little bit of a built-in audience here in the United States when it does finally get released.
What is, like I said, released domestically limited? I think it's already almost $10 million here, even on a limited release. So yeah, it is finding feet everywhere. I'm really interested to see how this plays into global box office numbers overall when it's said and done, what arguments are for and against it, where it fits in its rankings, because it being something that's not a Hollywood blockbuster, it's going to make for some interesting conversations on, well, what defines a global blockbuster? What defines a top five finish? Things such of that nature.
$31.5 million a day.
Yes,
is global blockbuster. I mean, that's the only number that matters is the dollar number.
It took no time at all. It is already, having just opened, it is already the second highest grossing non-English speaking film of all time in worldwide gross. And the movie that it's chasing is another Chinese movie that came out a couple of years ago, Wolf Warrior 2, and it's only 200 million behind, so it'll catch it in no time.
Easy catch considering what it's done in 3 weeks.
It just passed Passion of the Christ like a couple days ago.
Well, here's the thing that makes a difference. Let me jump in there really quick. Is in the United States, there are 5,800 screens in 2018. In China, there's 23,000 screens. That's three times the amount of screens in China that there are in the United States. So heck yeah, it's going to make that much money that fast.
But we as consumers here in the United States have been trained to go to theaters. It's the same thing of saying there's three times the amount of baseball stadiums in China. Doesn't mean you're going to get three times the amount of baseball fans over there, because baseball is a bigger thing here. That's my argument on it.
It's definitely a newish phenomenon. So if you look at the 10 highest grossing foreign language films or primarily non-English films of all time, Passion of the Christ came out in 2004 and is an American movie, but it's in Aramaic and Latin and Hebrew. There's a French movie, The Untouchables, that came out in 2011 that's up there. The other eight are all Chinese movies and have all come out since 2015. Five of them came out last year. One of them came out the year before that. And then, of course, The Wandering Earth came out this year.
It saved Pacific Rim. It's going to save Alita Battle Angel. The Chinese box office is no joke. But I think, Tyler, when you opened up that whole thing, you said it best. It is a new phenomenon over there. So I think the world, the numbers, everything like that, the records are still adjusting. Yeah, there's three times as many screens, but China doesn't have the long-standing history we do in going and supporting a movie in a theater. But maybe in a few years in the future, we'll see that most of the global top lists are Chinese movies.
So yeah, this is definitely, I mean, we give a lot of American studios crap for, you know, the Ancient One and Doctor Strange isn't really in Tibet, or we changed the villains from the remake of Red Dawn. I mean, they make a lot of these random reasons to be in China for a Transformers movie, but there is a reason. There is a lot of money to be made there, significantly more apparently than there is in the United States and a lot of Western countries.
Well, that's crazy. So, I mean, if you look at our highest grossing domestic movie, there's some unbelievable film in there. I haven't seen Wolf Warrior 2. I don't think it's on par with The Force Awakens. Like, I mean, those movies they're fantastic. And maybe Wolf Warrior 2's that amazing. It's wild to me that it's taken over the international box office that quickly in just a couple of years. I mean, legitimately, that's 4 years, but really only 3 years of making movies. So that's wild, man.
Also, Wolf Warrior 2 was made for $30 million and has Frank Grillo in it.
So they made 3,000% profit on that film. We put that one in the win column for sure.
Not quite in box offices yet, but should be a sleeper hit here in the States. Some people might have heard that it's coming. Jay and Silent Bob reboot has started filming, guys.
He specifically picked February 25th to start filming because it's the 1 year anniversary of his almost killed him heart attack. But there is definitely a picture of him and Jason Mewes and Jason Lee, complete with tiny little cup, with a dope picture of Stan Lee behind them on the first day of filming. And he's already said it will be in theaters like November. So I love Kevin Smith. There's some of his movies I'm like okay with. There's a lot of movies I love, but I will always show up to see a Jay and Silent Bob movie. I don't care. They're fun. They're stupid and ridiculous, and they're fun.
He's very good at that. That's for sure. If you need just to go have a good time, you can go see, you know, pop in Mallrats, pop in the original Jay and Silent Bob. Go see this one apparently in November, which is a crazy turnaround if they started February 25th and then releasing it this year. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm on board. Is it you say reboot. Is it actually reboot? I haven't paid any attention to it because I'm going to go see it. So it's just like, okay, cool. Or is it more of just like a sequel?
He hasn't said much. I mean, obviously, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back was a, you know, a play on sequels and pastiche kind of thing. But I think it's a reboot, but obviously all the same characters in it. So I don't know. Who knows? He'll probably lampshade it. The reboot in some way, and then it'll be
it's supposed to in his podcast recently he said that it's supposed to definitely play into all the Hollywood rebooting that's been happening and will mock it significantly. So I'm sure, much like you said in Strikes Back, where it
definitely good. I'm on board with that.
I do think it's a little weird that when you made your list of pop in fun Kevin Smith movies, you opened with Mallrats, like, and not something else. Okay.
Adam's a big Mallrats person.
I'm a Mallrats fan.
What would you open with, Tyler?
Probably Chasing Amy or Dogma.
Or Clerks.
I mean,
or Dogma. Clerks.
Clerks, no, what?
Clerks is a little bit tougher. It's not as just like ridiculous and fun as Mallrats. And I mean, same thing with Chasing Amy. Like, there's a lot more there.
Chasing Amy's deep, but it's still funny.
It is funny. I'm not saying it's not funny. There's a difference to me for funny and fun.
You sound like a tracer.
Oh, I hate you.
That is not out this week, but it is filming. And again, you can check out the Instagram updates. I'm sure Kevin Smith will keep updating people on Instagram and his podcast. Out this week, though, not much, guys. But I'm excited. You get Apollo 11, the documentary in IMAX. Never before seen footage remastered in high definition of the first moon landing mission. And then my guy, I don't even know why I bring him up to you three anymore, because you guys don't give a shit, but Jean-Claude Van Damme back with We Die Young. I'm ready. I'm ready for Jean-Claude Van Damme in theaters again.
I don't need to see Apollo 11. I saw First Man, and it just won the Oscar for best special effects. So yeah, you know.
Have you seen the trailer for Apollo 11? It looks so good.
Yeah, Kubrick did a really good job with all that footage.
So good, so good. So I don't know. Gives you a chance to catch up from what's been out. So Adam, you've been complaining the weather's been so bad, you haven't been able to go see movies. Here's your weekend to play catch up.
It is. It totally is. So it was a good weekend this past weekend, but there was nothing out that we really wanted to go see. And also Anthem came out, so I was stuck inside for a completely different reason. We may have to go out and see what's going on at the movie theater this weekend. There's still some stuff that I'd like to see. I saw, like, there's a lot of movies. My Carmack, because there's not a lot of big stuff coming out right now, is showing a bunch of the Oscar movies, and I never did see Green Book, so maybe I can go check that out because it's there. So
I heard it's pretty good, maybe best picture worthy.
Yeah, it has some buzz going right now.
I don't know how to define that buzz, but it is definitely out there. Yeah, I think you still got usually the rest of the week for many of those theaters still having those best picture ones in there, and I'm pretty sure Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is still in theaters as well. What you can visit though is On at Home, and we talked about it a little bit at the beginning of last week's episode. We didn't have much time to cover it because we had to do our Oscar picks. But since we've talked about it, it is everywhere now. People love the Umbrella Academy, guys. People, including me, including Tyler, and including Adam now. Bob, have you checked it out yet?
Bob, you actually been working at work, buddy? And not able to watch some Netflix?
Yes, I've been working at work. And like I said, I'm having issues with my Prime. But I was too busy with the Oscars, so you know,
doing all that research to get his win again.
To get my win again, I ain't gonna let you guys win. I'm gonna get having my donuts here.
So, Adam, you caught up since the last time Tyler and I we threw it some praise. We mentioned a few differences from the comics, talked about the possibilities ahead, very vaguely. Obviously, didn't want to spoil it. What'd you think?
I really, really enjoyed it. I mean, obviously, it's a fun story. I think they did a really good job, but I think they found a very good tone for the series. The dance scene in the first episode is just absolutely phenomenal. I found myself like dancing on the couch, like just sitting down, like moving. I'm like, God damn it, what is happening right now? And then all of the music choices for all of the big fights, absolutely fantastic as well. Like, it's just really, really, really well done. The only ding I have on it is that it ended. And no spoilers or anything. And I wanted so much more. And I immediately turned to my wife and I'm like, did we just watch a 10-hour intro to what's going to be a fantastic series when they released season two, because that's how it felt. I would tell everybody to go watch it. Like, don't not watch it because of that, because it's that good.
Well, that ending, you have no clue where it's going to go next.
Oh, now. Yeah. I mean, that's what I mean. That's why it felt like if that had been a one episode cliffhanger, I'd have been like, okay, cool. I got 8 episodes or 9 episodes to figure out where this is going. But now I've got probably a year or two wait to see what happens. So that's the only thing I would give it. I think the acting was great. The interplay between the characters was really believable and a fun story. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed a bunch of the.
So who was your favorite and why was it Klaus?
It's for sure Klaus throughout the whole thing. And I mean, episode one, I was like, oh yeah, he's for sure going to be the best character in this whole thing. Like, everybody else is a little too pigeonholed and Klaus is just out there living life, man. Dancing that dance scene again at the beginning with him is absolutely perfect.
He is and fantastic. That's for sure.
You're all wrong though. Obviously the best character is number five.
I was going to say that's
don't be silly.
If I had to pick one, I'd lean towards Klaus, but those two and the way we talked about how they toned down some of the quirkiness from the comics. I think they captured it back a little bit where you mentioned the songs that they use for the fight sequences, especially. But I really enjoyed how they took volume one, which is the Apocalypse volume, and volume two, Dallas, and kind of overlapped them, because kind of putting in number five's mysterious story of where he's been and what he's been up to for the many, many years longer than even the rest of them have lived because of his time traveling abilities is, I thought it blended well with the whole Apocalypse sequence too.
Yeah, and as secondary favorite character, I probably would have gone Hazel over five, I think. I really liked Hazel.
Hazel was really good.
Again, I mean, in the comics. The actor's
phenomenal, the Hazel, but the character is really great too, I thought.
The comics, Hazel and Cha-Cha aren't as significant. I mean, they're pretty significant in the same terms that they are two of the best time-traveling hitmen there are out there, but they don't have as big of a role, and they put a lot into him again here in season one. And yeah, it was fantastic. And he really comes a long way throughout there too.
I was also shocked because I really like her in a lot of stuff she's done, but it wasn't until after I'd finished the series and looked at the credits that the handler is Kate Walsh. Like, there's a lot of makeup and stuff going on, but I definitely did not recognize her. One thing I do want to ask, and because I've started watching it again, just to like see all the stuff I missed, because I kind of binged it pretty heavy. What's the cure? Because it's not as bad in this one as it's been in other, but there is parts where it gets a little rough. What is the cure for the Netflix, especially Netflix superhero show, saggy middle? Because it definitely has a saggy middle.
8 episodes. Just chop two hours off, right? Right off the top. Just, we're only doing 8 episodes. We're not doing 10 unless you give me a damn good reason why you need 10 hours.
Because Umbrella opens real strong and then gets saggy in the middle. And then it's like, oh, by the way, we saved all the best stuff for the last 3 episodes. Sorry you had to sit through, 5, 6, and 7. But here's 8, 9, and 10, and they're going to be dope AF.
You didn't like the day that wasn't and the day that was?
I'm not saying I didn't like them. They were really good episodes. I'm just saying a lot happens in like episode 1 and 2, and a lot happens in episode 8, 9, and 10. Not really much happens between those. Like, you get a lot of exposition, but the story doesn't move anywhere.
Oh, yeah, the story doesn't go anywhere. I feel like, we could probably talk on this for forever, not just with the Umbrella Academy, but Netflix in general, as you mentioned. I feel like it's their fear that if they take too long getting you into it, that people are going to drop off early in the series. So that's why they give you so much in those opening episodes. And then they're like, as you said, well, we got 10 episodes to fill here, so okay, let's get this covered in the middle. That may be what's going on.
Well, and I think the interplay between the siblings like really suffered, because at the very beginning, like they first meet each other, you're like, oh, these are people who knew each other. And then it's almost as if they don't really know each other for like 5 or 6, 7 episodes. And at the end, like, oh no, they're definitely siblings who grew up together again. Like there's not a lot of like cool familial interplay. And then at the very end, like 8, 9, 10, like, oh no, like that scene, like that episode with Rumor, sorry, what's her name?
Allison
and Vanya,
like, number three
in the cabin, and like seeing the conversation in the past and in the future, and then when she does what she does to her, like that was amazing. But like there's a lot of stuff you have to slog through to get to it. They don't know what to do for 4 or 5 more episodes, and then the ramp up to the end, the last 3 or 4, are always super strong. But
well, I think Iggy hit on it, and you mentioned and you're hitting on is pulling everybody in becomes so important right out of the gate that they leave off any of the exposition in the beginning. It's introduction and here's all the cool stuff we're going to do. And then crap, we didn't actually tell you what the story is. So now we're going to start telling you some story and we're not going to do any of that cool stuff for a little bit. And then you get more cool stuff once we've told you and caught you up with the story.
Well, here's a problem with the Umbrella Academy part of that. As we mentioned, you're mixing volume two into volume one. You pretty much get the whole arc of volume one and you get the whole bones of volume two, I guess would be a way to put it. There's so much more they could have done with number five and that whole working for the commission and time traveling thing that could have filled in that little bit more. Maybe another worry was that they would focus too much on one character and leave out the other ones. Maybe there was that or something. So I get what you're saying. I feel though, if we're going to call this a slouch, it was a pretty good slouch because the whole series was still good. I agree. You're stronger at the beginning. You're stronger at the end. And I agree with you that this is a standard formula problem with Netflix. I feel like there could have been a lot done here. Maybe though, it's left for season two. My only fear though is that they move on, and I haven't read it yet, volume three. I don't even remember what it's called yet. I want to go read it now. My fear is that that's where they're just going to jump straight into a season two and not cover more of the Dallas arc. That's the Umbrella Academy. We have a lot to say about it, Cash. We could probably do a few episodes on it, maybe a now streaming special or something. I loved it. I've already finished it two times and I'm ready to start it a third time. Seriously. Yeah, so it's fantastic. Let us know what you think, obviously, in the comments below. If you have any feedback on anything else we've talked about so far as well, or another big topic that we're about to hit on, we got a little hint into what's coming into Marvel Phase 4. Sorry, I'm going to have to edit that. I clicked the wrong buttons.
Are you going to lead us into that or what?
I clicked the wrong buttons and then my Adobe Cloud was on my screen and I couldn't see anything. And I was like, am I muted? Am I not? I don't know. So maybe not edited. That's pretty funny. So anyways, yes, Kevin Feige, he talked a little bit to, gosh, I don't even remember what it was. Sorry. He talked to somebody. He did a press interview and they obviously asked, we're getting closer and closer to Avengers Endgame, further and further away from those spoilers. What's coming up for Phase 4? What can you tell us next? And he said, we're still not there. We don't want to give you too much information. We don't want to talk specifics, characters, or anything, because even though we have an understanding of who's going to be around after Endgame's done and that, it still could lead to other spoilers. He did give us two big things, which I think are interesting, is one, they want to tell the stories in Phase 4 like completely different than they've told the stories in the first three phases. So they want to make completely different movies, which I like. And we'll get into that. And number two was they want to introduce us to a lot more characters. And he brought up good points of how well the Guardians of the Galaxy were received, even though they were not widely known amongst the non-comic readers out there, and many other characters too. They want to give us a lot. And Marvel, and we're already going into, you know, out away from Earth into all these other characters. We're talking about Fox. They're already talking like Fox's deal is done. So we know that's coming in. And we have a lot of opportunity here. But I'm excited mainly for the stories being told differently, because what I think worked so good for those first three phases of Marvel was giving those reins to different types of directors and letting them do what they do. From the Captain Americas being like spy thrillers to the, you know, comedic twist of Thor Ragnarok, the James Gunn touch on Guardians of the Galaxy, all of those, you know, just putting the faith in those people. So I want to see what they do here in the next phase in terms of that.
I want to see him go dark and gritty and do DC movies better than DC does DC movies and just like get super intense and super, super realistic and have characters with whose moms have the same names get into a fight and then not have a fight because their moms have the same name. They won't. I know they won't, but they should is what I'm going to say.
We're all just staring at Adam, by the way, for those that don't have the visuals. He's gaining some, it's almost like three extra set of eyes just popped into these screens just to look at you oddly.
I'm okay with that. No. And you know, pick something that nobody's ever heard of except comic book readers and go just full bore. Because you've got DC now going running as fast as they can in the opposite direction to do funny stuff. Like I think we're going to get with Shazam to try to be like Guardians of the Galaxy and Thor Ragnarok and get funny.
There was originally talk of like Black Widow was going to be R-rated, but now Kevin Feige said, no, it's going to be PG-13. I think if you're going to start getting, if you want to get dark, I think that's going to be the start of the, of that dark storytelling, because Black Widow is not a funny comic. So I think that's going to kind of be the start of it all. And I know that they are going to do a couple movies with Black Widow. So she'll be a part of that.
Yeah. I think Feige's been pretty clear that the Marvel universe has that, the MCU at least has no intention of ever crossing over into that R-rated territory. You're not going to ever see an MCU like main phase movie that's R-rated. I doubt like PG-13 may even be pushing a little bit.
Yeah, he shut the door on that quick.
I've been thinking about it, like, what's the most ridiculous character I could see them making? And there's a lot of them out there. I mean, Marvel's been around for a really long time, and there's so many one-offs and weird ones. I think they have a lot of opportunity. I mean, they dug pretty deep with Guardians of the Galaxy, but that whole cosmic realm with the Krees and, you know, all that kind of stuff, like doing, you know, like they've teased Adam Warlock a little bit. So you get like all those different characters. I think the cosmic world of it, that's really been made up and been added to by the, made by the Guardians of the Galaxy, added to by Thor, has some interesting opportunities, but like, I don't even know anymore. Like they've pulled out characters that, Batroc the Leaper was in a major motion picture that made a lot of money. Like at this point, they can literally pull out whoever they want. And I'm like, yeah, that makes sense.
They can. One quick thing that I realized is Moon Knight. I was super excited for that. I was trying to think of characters they could do. And then I remembered, oh, he was supposed to get a Netflix series along the lines of the Defenders shows. Oh, there's no Defenders Marvel shows anymore on Netflix. Where's Moon Knight? I don't know.
Or hell, maybe Hulu now. They got that juicy Hulu deal.
Well, and then, like, they've got some, you know, they've got that high quality content over on, I can't even remember the name of the streaming service. What's Cloak and Dagger on?
Freeform.
You got Freeform out there. So,
okay, before we go any further, and we're running low on time, what is Freeform? Like, I've heard about it only because of Cloak and Dagger. Like, I've never heard of it outside of Cloak and Dagger.
Wasn't it originally ABC Family?
Is that what it was?
Well, yeah, it was originally ABC Family, and then they went to Freeform. I mean, I get it on my...
That answers some questions then. Yeah. So it's not even streaming. It's just a channel.
It's just a channel.
Oh, so it's ABC Family, obviously, would be Disney ABC. And okay.
Yeah, it is a channel. Not a lot of people get it. So as of like, I think the last time they counted, it was one of those like, it's a Disney, I mean, Disney ABC, whatever they own it, but it's in like maybe 92... million households in the United States.
I thought you were just going to say 92 households.
No, but it's... Yeah,
it sounded like 92. I would have believed 92.
It does have a streaming service, which I think is a lot of how people get it.
Real quick, since we're talking kind of about it, Captain Marvel is next week. By the time this airs, we are 1 week away from Captain Marvel. Before we started recording, everybody was making sure they had their tickets lined up correctly so they can go see it. This is going to be the first movie in a long time. We're all four going to go see it opening weekend, guys. This is good. This is good. Interesting enough, before it even opened up to critics. Now, at this point, you can see some honest, real reviews from critics. But before you could, the trolls came out to play. And this is Tyler's favorite topic, internet trolls. He loves to talk about it. They came out. They poisoned the apples. They just spammed Rotten Tomatoes. Just negative reviews, bad reviews and everything, and actually caused Rotten Tomatoes to change the way the review system is set up even.
Yeah, so I mean, the Rotten Tomatoes review are after the movie releases. Before the movie releases, they have a "Do you want to see this?" or "Want to see this score?" And they used to list it as a percentage. So however many people voted, "Yes, I want to see it," "No, I don't want to see it," it was a percentage of how many people wanted to actually see it. That got bombed. So they had like 34,000 votes. And of that, like 30% were, "Yes, I want to see it." So they just got crazy no votes on it, to the point where it's like, well, why, you know, this is a confusing thing. And so it looks like a score because they gave it as a percentage, like they give their percentage of their percentage scores for the reviews afterwards. And so they thought it was, one, both too confusing for everybody and too easy for people just to be negative. If you don't want to see a movie, just don't vote, is what they're saying now, I guess. And now they're going to switch to just giving a raw number for people who want to see it. So it switched from a percentage to just 14,000 people or something like that.
What entices you to just, "I'm bored, I'm angry at the world, I have programming capabilities, coding capabilities. I'm going to set up some bots, go poison these scores, just piss off everybody because why? Why?
Because you're obviously not aware of the ongoing war against the straight white male. The white genocide is here, Iggy, and they're coming for us.
Well, that's my white privilege. I don't see it because I am a straight white male.
These people pop up in every single form of the internet. Like you said, you say it's my favorite topic. It's not my favorite topic. It just makes me angry because
it was sarcastic in me saying.
I could go on a diatribe at this for hours. Just the middle gymnastics that giving other people things that you didn't have doesn't mean we took them from you. Like women and minorities and whatever, getting representation doesn't mean all of a sudden you don't have it. Like Captain Marvel has, you know, it does have a female lead in it. I guarantee you, there's at least 30 other white dudes in the movie.
Not only that, literally 2 weeks later, you are getting a white male Captain Marvel movie, and Shazam, it's Captain Marvel also. Like, you are getting the same exact thing 2 weeks later that you want without representation.
I don't want to feed the monster. I don't want to sink to their level. I don't want to continue. I don't want to lower the already super low threshold of the discourse.
Anticipation.
But he's going to.
I'm going
anticipation to. Anticipation.
Anyone who goes on these websites and goes on their libtard cuck SJW diatribe could just fuck off and die.
All right. So with that, we are going to roll into final thoughts. And Bob, are you able to speak at this moment?
Oh, God.
Can you get us started?
That was too funny. I just have to say, Varsity Donuts, Manhattan, the maple bacon donuts. Oh my God, they are so good. And why we didn't get them to sponsor us at some point in all our travels and stuff like that.
We were all in Manhattan still. We talked about them like crazy. Yeah. Like more than we talk about AMC A-list. AMC. So we're going to have Varsity Donuts. Tyler's making the bread. Adam's home brewing the beer. I'm ready. I'm ready for Kansas City.
What are you cooking?
I mean, I can cook. You know what? Actually, there's my final thought right there. I'm upset with myself tonight. I made s'mores cheesecake and it was really good. But after I got done with dinner tonight, I ate some candy because I forgot I had s'mores cheesecake in the fridge. And then I was mad at myself because I'm like, do I get to that point?
I'm mad at you by proxy, bro.
Do I get to that point of miserable and just go ahead and eat it? Which is still in the
debate. That's
still
on the table. Yeah, that's on the table.
Debate is still happening. But I won't forget tomorrow. I promise you guys that.
All right, just make yourself miserable. Have a peace tonight.
Good call. I'll go with you, Bob. I'm on that one. Tyler, what you got for us? Some final thoughts.
Definitely watch Letterkenny on Hulu. It's weird and out there about people in rural Ontario. I know that sounds thrilling. But if nothing else, just go on to YouTube, look up Letterkenny cold open, watch that scene. You'll know fairly quickly if it's for you or not, but I would highly recommend it.
Mr. Adam Adair.
Play some video games this weekend, kids. There's lots of good stuff. Like I said, Anthem came out for everybody, so the full release. It had a crazy release schedule because of EA Origins Premium, give us all of your money service that you can get on your PC and apparently on your Xbox because Microsoft likes more money. Sony told them, no, don't, we're not putting another paid service on our video game system. You can go to hell. So it opened for everybody. I think it's a really fun game. It appears to be right now the most divisive game on the internet because people either think it is good and enjoy it. And then there's a large faction of people who think that those people are idiots and that it's the worst game ever made. And,
Tyler, you know, Tyler has some feedback for those people.
Right. We know.
I've been playing it as well. I am definitely torn.
It's okay. So that's what I wanted my final thought to be, is it's okay for people to enjoy something that you don't enjoy. It's okay for something to be not the best thing ever made and for people to still like it, even though it's not the best thing ever made. Everything is okay here, folks. Anthem is just a video game. It's fun for some people. You hate it. We get it. Let other people enjoy it. If you don't, that's okay. I just want to say everything's going to be okay.
Everything is awesome, right?
Well, I don't know about awesome, but everything will be okay.
All right. So in closing, obviously, we have a lot going on with Project Nerd. You can check out I'm Not Famous, returning in April, end of March. You can find Modern Sex returning in March. And of course, we are launching our new podcast, including Diving Deep, which we've talked about a little bit. And there will be a whole new podcast schedule with, that's right, guys, up to 5 podcasts a week over on Project Nerd starting in May. Exciting, exciting content happening there, as well as the website's been busy, guys. Busy, busy, busy. Some great stuff happening over there. Some fun reviews. Little against our Lego Movie 2 review, but you know, that's the thing. People have other opinions, as Adam was just letting us know. So, point being, all kinds of cool content happening at projectnerd.com. It is busy. It is happening again. We promised you at the end of last year that 2019 would be booming. And ladies and gents, it is booming. You can also catch us, of course, at Planet Comic Con. We did just finish up at the Front Range Film Festival. Interviews coming soon, but we'll be at Planet Comic Con in Kansas City at the end of March. We'll have coverage of the Lions Film Festival, Dink in Denver, as well as Star Wars Celebration in April. And then it's just game on from there with comic conventions and film festivals. I'm excited. I know you guys are excited. I think that's one of our favorite things to do is go to these things, have a good time, hang out, eat some food, obviously. But check it all out, projectnerd.com, project-nerd.com for everything. And of course, wherever you're finding the Nerdcast, you're finding other awesome podcasts. So when it pops up on your feed and you see Meeple Skills now streaming, I'm Not Famous, the many others, give it a listen. Let us know what you think. If you found us and don't subscribe, we really appreciate clicking that subscribe. All right, guys. I'm going to sign out for us now. That's it for episode 185. Dude, we're 15 away from 200. We're getting there. 185 of the Nerdcast. Until next week.